Welcome to the Real Python Podcast. This is episode 293. How do you add agent skills to your data science workflow? How can a coding agent assist with data wrangling and research? This week on the show, Trevor Manns from Marimo joins us to discuss Marimo Pair. Trevor is a founding engineer at Marimo, where he's been working on integrating LLM tools with Marimo. We discuss the balancing act of building a skill and determining how to give an agent access to all the variables in a notebook. He shares how they built a specialized reactive REPL that eliminates hidden state and allows the program to continue constructing a reproducible Python program. We dig into installing and getting started with Marimo Pair. Trevor also covers several of the tasks an agent can tackle in a data science workflow. All right, let's get started. The Real Python Podcast is a weekly conversation about using Python in the real world. My name is Christopher Bailey, your host. Each week, we feature interviews with experts in the community and discussions about the topics, articles, and courses found at realpython.com. After the podcast, join us and learn real-world Python skills with a community of experts at realpython.com. Hey, Trevor, welcome to the show.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, Akshay reached out to me and I had him on the show a little while ago to talk about the introduction to Marimo, and I've been tooting the horn, talking about it a lot. In fact, had featured your guys' Marimo awesome list very recently, and he said, hey, we're doing this new thing, and I was like, yeah, cool. I'd love to talk to you about sort of the state of Marimo, but also get this new idea, which kind of excites me for the potential in the data science world. Something that I think we'll dig into, not that Marimo has to only be used in it, but definitely it has its big advantages there. Yeah, I'm excited to talk.
Yeah, happy to be here. Excited to chat about Marimo and yeah, what we've been working on recently.
So what do you do at Marimo, Trevor?
Yeah, it's a good question. I do a lot of things at Marimo. I joined earlier last year, but before that, I got connected with the original team of Akshay and Miles through open source. And today I'm working on a few different things in Marimo. I work on the main Marimo code base, which is sort of our reactive Python notebook. I also work on the Marimo VS Code extension. So folks that want to use Marimo notebooks inside VS Code and get all the niceties of Marimo inside that environment.
I need to check it out.
I work on that. And then more recently, I've been working on something called Marimo Pair, which is sort of a new way of interfacing with Marimo notebooks through AI coding agents.
Yeah. I mean, gosh. You know, most conversations in the world of Python now kind of are circling around AI type topics. And I can see how there'd be an interest in, well, what are you guys going to do with it? And you've done a couple things with AI at Marimo. It seems like pretty early on, I'm not sure how early on, you started to be able to have AI assisted coding and connecting to agents. It's very configurable when you look at like the control panel inside of it. So do you want to talk a little bit about that? Maybe when you started getting that going?
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, maybe just comment on the state of like AI usage inside the Python ecosystem. I think there is just starting, what I've recognized is, you know, in our own use of using these tools to actually build Marimo, we have an increasing number of users that have higher expectations about like how, like users that are coming in that want to have a familiar experience with authoring like maybe traditional software and want a similar type of experience for working inside notebooks. And so a lot of it's been trying to understand, like, I guess on the lineage of the type of integrations that we've had before, we have like sort of a chat interface inside of the Marimo notebook itself, which a lot of, I think our role there is to provide a familiar experience. And then thinking about how do we get the models the right context from the notebook to be able to execute useful tasks on behalf of users. And so some of the early integrations that we had were things like Marimo has an understanding of like your cells and the variables that you have in those cells. And as you're like typing in your chat, we could try to give you autocomplete to inject like, hey, I want to talk about this data frame. I'm going to reference that data frame. And then we had some pre-configured like formulas basically for grabbing like schemas from the data frame such that when you send that prompt off to, you know, your LLM, it had some information about, you know, what columns are in that data frame such that, you know, it wouldn't hallucinate when it was sort of sketching out like maybe the plot that it wanted to make.
Right. Here's the actual information.
Here's the actual data that you have in memory. And I think so that was sort of the early progression. And I saw what over time, we had some integrations with MCP as well, where basically Marimba became this bottleneck of providing sort of mediated access to the state that it had inside the environment. And so in that context of the autocomplete that I was talking about before, that state was like, what are the variables that I have in memory? And, you know, that might be useful for the LLM in a specific context.
Okay.
And then with MCP, there are things like, okay, what are the cells? Like, what are the outputs of the cells? And I think we started to realize there's this very long list of things that like might be useful to a model to have. And we'd have a bunch of issue requests that opened up that were, you know, suggesting different tools or ways that we could expose some of that state to the models.
Yeah.
And that got us thinking like, maybe we need to think about this problem a little bit differently. And like, how do we give models more access to just querying the state that's inside Marimba directly using Python code? And that's sort of like what led us in this direction of working on Marimba Pair, which is, yeah, how do we give models access to asking about the data and anything that they want about the notebook that they can do by just writing Python code rather than having to anticipate what might be useful to the models in that environment.
Yeah. I don't know how far I need to dig into like what Marimba is. Again, I've mentioned it a bunch on the show. Mm-hmm. We have some courses and tutorials on Real Python. I guess we could give an overview for somebody who just sort of like wandered into this conversation about data science and notebooks in general, if they had not been familiar with it. Do you have a quick answer for that? I'm guessing you have to pitch this all the time.
Yeah. I'd say Marimba is a delightful reactive Python notebook. And the three pieces there that I think are important are delightful in the sense that we've really thought a lot about the things that people like. We've had sort of this effect of being able to look at notebooks and how they're used in the wild and work our way backwards.
Right.
And think, you know, what are sort of the long tail of things that our users might want to use inside of a notebook? And then trying to accomplish improvements to the user interface or user experience that are really cater to people having success when working in notebooks. Second, the notebook being reactive, insofar as unlike a traditional Python notebook or even like a Python REPL, Marimba understands the relationships between your cells based off of what variables they define. And so we actually model a notebook as sort of a graph, a directed acyclic graph of the variables and their relationships. But what this means is that a Marimba notebook is like, it's a Python program that has a reproducible execution order. And such that, you know, if you hand off a Marimba notebook to someone else, they should be able to restore it back to the environment or the state that you had it previously. And so it kind of removes this barrier of something called like hidden state that could occur in like traditional Python notebooks and could make them a bit challenging to restore. And then finally, we're heavily focused on Python. We are a Python notebook. So
yeah.
Jupyter has this ability to extend with many different types of kernels, but instead we are hyper-focused on Python as far as all the way down as like our file format on disk is a Python file. It is not like an IPyMV file. And also because of that, we've been able to get back to that first point of like being a delightful experience because we can do things like integrate with package managers or really try to follow trends that are happening in the Python ecosystem to make sure that, you know, what the work that you do inside a Marimba notebook is more transferable and like reproducible and has like these characteristics that stakeholders that are doing data work with Python really care about.
Yeah. And we've hit on all those things in much more depth in other shows where, you know, we've talked about the problem of statefulness in notebooks and the Jupyter problem and these, you know, I think people have maybe experienced it even on their own where, you know, people use notebooks very often like a physical notebook and they'll just toss stuff in there and they're trying things out and they'll run cells in whatever order they feel like and so forth because it was meant for them. It wasn't necessarily meant to share. And then suddenly, wait, oh, I have to completely refactor or redo this notebook to be able to share it with someone else. And this is much more geared toward shareability in a lot of ways. Some of the things that I thought were really cool about it is, like you said, it can take advantage of a lot of things that have developed in the Python community. During the time that I've been doing the show, you know, things that have been really, really fantastic, like the TOML file format and, you know, the ability to run the stuff on the web, which I think is really, really cool. So yeah, if you aren't familiar with those things, you definitely can listen to other conversations and I'll have a link to that or just jump on the site, marimo.io, and you can learn a little bit more. Not trying to make this a sales pitch, but again, I'm very excited about it. And I think it's a very positive push in the direction for notebooks generally. So,
yeah, cool.
Then to go a little bit further, what is Marimo Pair? You kind of hinted at it right at the end of your you know, like, well, what are we doing with AI stuff? And we kind of got to that tail of it. So you kind of wanted to be able to give, I guess, kind of moving from chat to agent, like so many things are, to sort of empower this tool to be able to look through the notebook and have context aware of what's happening. And I don't know if I'm explaining that well, but that's kind of where you started looking at this problem and how you're going to solve it.
Yeah. Like zooming out a little bit, agents, you know, in my own development, using agents for traditional software development, I found that I had the best success when I could frame the problem in such a way that the agent could go off and self-correct and figure out how to accomplish the task on my behalf. And often it's like writing for, you know, traditional software development, it's something like writing a unit test and then describing a plan of like what you want.
Okay.
And then you could kind of just like let the model go off and work on that problem. So out of the box, like, well, the definition of an agent is really some LLM or model plus tools and a loop. And I think the tools that agents have out of the box are really good for many, many software tasks, which are basically the ability to like read and write code and read and write files and then execute scripts. And this goes a really long way for doing traditional software development, where I think, you know, tasks can be pretty well defined. There's a feature, we scope it out, you come up with some plan, you write some tests, and then you edit some files, you run the tests, make sure things pass, and you can ship that feature.
Yeah. And you can connect it to like GitHub or, you know, other kinds of things that are potential tasks that are inside that loop.
Exactly. But in each of those tasks, the sort of representation of state is the like is your file system. Like it's your tests plus like these files that you've edited and changed and you're using Git to version them over time. And one difference is that like a lot of data work doesn't take place like fully on these like one-off sort of like scripts against your file system.
Right.
Like we have developed tools for working with data like notebooks or even things like Excel that really have indexed on this value of being able to not only have your code, but also like state that like lives in memory that allows you to like introspect like intermediate values in your environment and right. help you understand where you're going next. And so
kind of like the Excel example would be you have formulas and there can be calculated cells and you can have it in a mode where like you change a value in a cell and across the entire spreadsheet, it updates everything. And that's very similar to what you guys are doing inside the notebook of a Marimo notebook.
Yeah, exactly. But similar to Excel, like I don't actually know what the file format looks like under the hood. But
yeah, right.
But you have your values, and then you have formulas. But the thing that as a stakeholder that you care about are like what are the outputs of those formulas, and like what is that state that I actually have in this environment. And so one challenge of allowing like agents to participate in that kind of work is that those systems, like something like Excel or Marimo or even Jupyter, have to figure out how to bring the agent in to allow it to, you know, see that state. So as a user, I have both my code and my values in this like single environment.
Okay.
But historically, with like the tools that are at hand for agents for doing data, like out of the box, like the ability to read and write files and run scripts, it only gets to see sort of one part of that system. So it might just see the file on disk and like the inputs, but it doesn't get to see like your values that are in memory because that does live in the environment.
Okay, so the Python file per se could be loading data in, you know, and have that be in memory. But if it's just reading that, it's just like that's a URL or a destination. It doesn't necessarily know how, you know, those computations have happened. And like you said, the state has been updated. Things have been run.
Yeah. Or concretely, like my code might load a pandas or polars data frame.
Right.
And now I have this tabular data. And in a different cell, I try to access a column from that data.
Okay.
And on disk, that code might look like a single line that loads a data frame and then another line of code that like indexes into that data frame. But does that actually give me back a column from the data frame? Does that throw an error? Like those are things that the model can't actually see.
Right.
And so historically, if you've been trying to use agents with notebooks, you'd have to sort of babysit your agent by saying like, okay, you edited the file, but actually, there's an error. Here's the error. And the model can't sort of like self-correct and like fix it and keep going. So it's either you or the system that needs to figure out how to allow the agent to like self-correct and fix those things.
I feel like this is, I mean, the name is about pair programming. That's kind of where it's coming from. And this is you, the senior or whatever you want to call it, setting up the situation to say, okay, this is not only the program, this is how far we've gotten so far. This is how you find this information. This is kind of going a little bit more into like the programming you guys are doing on that side to be able to give that information about state to this agent. And that's kind of what is new about what you guys have actually written into Marimo.
Yeah. So like to give an actual definition of like Marimo Pair, Marimo Pair is an agent skill that teaches an agent how to use Marimo effectively as a tool.
Okay.
So it basically gives notebooks, or it gives agents like notebooks as a tool. So one thing, I don't know if you've ever experimented with this, but like agents are actually pretty good at, if you give just like give it a problem with some data and you say like, okay, hey, go investigate this. Like it'll go off and like do some exploration and come back to you with like some answer. But what you end up is like what I mentioned before, the tools that they're equipped with out of the box are really oriented around file systems. So at the very end, like what you'll get is sort of like a bunch of different scripts and maybe some logs and some outputs that have been just like put on your file system to disk and an answer. And that's not really like an artifact that's necessarily useful. It might've been useful for that like one-off task, but it's not like it's not the way, if you want to go back and update any of those intermediate states, it's really hard. There haven't necessarily been the guardrails to keep the model into doing it a specific way.
Okay.
And so the way I like to think about it is like with the tools that are in hand, like basically if you have a hammer, like every problem is going to look like a nail. And so the model figure is going to take a data problem and turn it into like a set of files and logs and scripts on the file system.
Right.
But as humans, like we've developed tools that are really good for working with data, like notebooks are sort of the canonical example.
Right.
And it's just that we haven't really allowed the models to have access and come into like using them as an actual tool and being able to participate in those sessions. And so the idea of Marimo Pair is to just bring the models into the session by allowing them to sort of like, quote unquote, like live inside the Marimo kernel and ask any questions that they might want with Python in your running notebook session. So it's not just us defining different, like an MCP where we say, okay, yeah, you can ask about cells, you can ask about data frames, you can ask about variables.
Right. Here's how you get in and out of all that information, like how you send and receive and talk to the different components.
Yeah. Instead, we don't mediate it at all, basically. And we just say, you can run Python code in the kernel and ask about state or data or values and do scratch pad work. But then we also have within that execution environment, which is just like a Python kind of REPL type thing, the model is able to perform tasks inside the actual user interface for the user. So it can create cells, run cells, edit cells, and all the types of things that you might want to do in a notebook. So when you give the model the task, or you use the Marimo Pair skill and you say, you know, load my data frame and make this chart, the model will go off and maybe first try to look at, maybe run some scratchpad code to look and see what the columns are. Then it might add that to the cell. Then it might make another cell with a plot. And all along the way, it has sort of the guardrails that you and I have as we're working inside Marimo, where it can see the errors that are happening inside the notebook. It can self-correct and then sort of get to an output that is without needing to step in and say, oh, actually you hallucinated this API. Like that's not useful. So as you're working, you're building up this like reproducible artifact rather than just like a set of files and logs on your file system.
I wonder if it's a good time to discuss the concept of building a skill and kind of what goes into that. I've had a variety of conversations. I mean, all this is so new, you know, literally you guys reached out last week on email,
yeah,
which is amazing. But I've been talking about spec-driven development with a variety of people, and then skills kind of became much more solidified in sort of the fall of last year. And I know generally they're kind of in that same family, this idea of like, and I've been talking about MCP quite a bit off and on with a variety of people. And MCP is sort of defining a lot of things that we talked about, the ins and outs, and like, how do you talk to the system and so forth. Mm-hmm. And the skill can then add like code, like, you know, actual, like you can use this types of script or information inside of it. And I did a little research on my own. It's like, okay, let me dig through this thing and read it. And it is fairly, you know, human readable. That's kind of the nice thing about all of these AI enhancements in a lot of ways. Like, you know, the best versions of these things are readable not only to the machine and the agent, but it's also readable, you know, as a, you know, human being kind of looking at it. It may be complex, but at least you can kind of like try to parse through a lot of it. And I've not built any. That's something a lot of the team at RealPython have been doing quite a bit. The other members of the core team there have been building tools to. We have a very large Django platform, so we've been doing lots of interesting stuff with that and building skills to like proofread things and look at things and so forth. I had a whole conversation about it recently, how we've been trying to implement that stuff, but I haven't done it. You know, I haven't built one. And so, like, was this new for you, or is this something that you've learned techniques as you've built Marimo Pair as far as building a skill?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think, like, working on a skill, like on the Marimo Pair skill, has like taught me a lot about like writing skills on my own. And for someone that is now working in this space, like, I was pretty, like, my own usage of like these agentic coding tools, and like I was using coding tools a lot at work, but I wasn't working on my own skills. And then I think by working on this project,
such a great way to learn it.
Yes, and now I've like really seen the value of one, like, learning how to actually write these things, and sort of unlearning some of the, like, it's trial and error with, especially because you are working on this side of it as being like a stochastic kind of system.
Okay.
So, you know, originally the idea of Marimo Pair was, it was very simple. It was just like, what if we just let the model like run code inside of the Marimo kernel? And the way that I started was I wired that up, which is, you know, very few lines of code to actually just let it like have an endpoint where it could run some code in the kernel. But then I just said, like, can you toast me a notification in the Marimo UI? Like, can you just say hi to me in the Marimo UI? And like, I saw it like make a bunch of mistakes, hallucinate some APIs, try importing things. It just kept hitting its head. And then finally I saw like a message flash on my screen. I was like, well, okay, how did you do that? And then I went back to the logs and just looked at it. And that started helping me think about, like, okay, this could be an entry point of being able to drive Marimo from like a different, not the user interface, but instead like this code, like through code on the Python side.
Right.
And so the original version of the skill was trying to write all these sequences of things that it needed to do in order to accomplish tasks. So something like, okay, if you want to add a cell, call this method, then this method, then this method, and like really trying to put that all into like this markdown file to teach it how to do something. And then what I quickly discovered was that wasn't going to have nice properties in terms of us being able to like improve the skill over time, because, you know, if we bake in what it needs to do into the skill and they have a different version of Marimo, now we have this whole issue with like, okay, how does it actually update the UI? We've changed some internals.
Yeah.
And so what that ended up, we sort of introduced a second part of Marimo Pair, is this hidden API inside of Marimo that is, I would call it like agent only. It's called code mode.
Okay.
And the idea is that we took a lot of those sequences of things that were useful to do in the user interface, and we put them behind an API that's made for the agent to use. And so now what the skill itself does is it's become a lot less prescriptive on like exactly what the agent needs to do. And I've heard this described as like, don't try to put your agent in a box. Like, don't be so prescriptive about like exactly what it needs to do.
Yeah, I could see that would be bad, because like there's so many different agents.
Yes, exactly. Oh, so the learning lesson for me was like, originally there are sort of two types of things Marimo notebooks could do, or an agent can do it with Marimo Pair. And one is sort of what I call like scratchpad work. It just can run like one-off little things to just inspect variables, like read-only types of tasks.
Yeah.
And then the other type of work it can do is sort of like mutations to the notebook, like change the cells, run cells, that type of stuff.
Right.
And when I was originally writing the skill, I was like, okay, before you add anything to the notebook, always make sure that code runs in the scratchpad before you add it. And that way, like, you know, by the time it's running that cell in the notebook, it's sort of like guaranteed that it's going to work. And for, you know, cells that don't take very long to run, that was like totally great. Like it felt like this really good user experience. And then I started working on some tasks that I was like loading some data, doing some ETL, and like it was so regimented at like obeying that that dogmatic, like, always do this in the scratch pad, then add it to the notebook. Okay. Then it started being this like really bad experience because it would like run the query twice. And so we instead sort of had to, I've sort of had to unlearn like this sort of like imperative type of prompting, which is like, do this, then do this, then do this.
Yeah.
And instead
switch it.
And instead switch it to a more declarative type of prompting, where the role of the skill is not to tell it the sequence of what to do, but to give it an understanding of like what tools are available. So like, here's, if you need to do this type of thing, this is where this exists. If you want to learn about it, like, this is how you can learn about it. And then be, and then give it the nuance of like how to use those tools, such that when a user has a very high level task, like, hey, I want to load a data frame, the model goes, okay, these are the tools I have available. And you sort of have it opened up for it, the model, to be able to figure out how to accomplish that task best for the user.
That's cool. So it's like literally declarations across the board. That's the lesson of like building skills. Like, okay, yeah, don't, you know, don't go so much into the step-by-step, but like, this is, you know, directionally where we want to go and what we're looking to get out of it. And I think that might be a really nerdy part for a lot of people to get into, but I feel directionally, you know, that's the way this industry is moving, is like, okay, well, you can build on top of what we're building here and build those types of things. They don't have to be as elaborate, but you might yourself have a need for giving, you know, declaratively, this is the kind of directions that we want to go. And that's cool.
Yeah, it's like, it's a lot of communicating, or actually, which is valuable overall, communicating like, what are the things to keep in mind and what should one care about when like using this tool, not necessarily how exactly to use it. And I had actually a coworker that was saying, is very much like mentoring like a junior engineer. Like when you first have one for the first time, you're like, okay, do this. And you're like, might be a little bit on top of them to like,
right.
And then as you build trust, you actually sort of want there to be more, you want to give them the resources and be less exactly prescriptive, but like,
let's learn what their creative tools are here.
Exactly. And so I think like maybe that's been my experience here, is like unlearning that a little bit. And I got my undergraduate was from a liberal arts college. And I find now I am like using that skill of like communication and like,
right.
Like I'm really thinking about, okay, how do I capture the nuance about like what's behind this interface and like what are the things to keep in mind, and less so about like, yeah, the imperative side of, you know, because the model sort of might, it can, with the correct direction, will like figure out a solution probably. And these models are becoming more capable. So it's just an interesting space to be in.
Yeah. I think we could maybe, somebody could skip past that part, right? Because I leave chapters.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be interesting regardless for them to go back and go, okay, well, maybe I am interested in learning a little more about that. But let's go to like, well, how would somebody set this up and what's sort of involved there? Because I feel like, you know, maybe we'll bring in a few data scientists to say, hey, I'm interested in using agents, and I'm not exactly sure how I'd do that with the kind of tools that I use.
Yeah, that's a great question. So today, like this feature is packaged up as a agent skill.
Yeah.
And so a skill is sort of there is a standard for how to package up a skill. We just have it in a repo that's called Marimo Pair. I'm certain that we'll link it in the show notes here.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And then there are a few different utilities of like how to install a skill. So, I mean, if you don't want to use any of those, you can literally copy those files into like your .claude.skills file, or if you're using the agent standard agents.skills and put the skill there.
Okay.
We've linked a few things in the README there. There's a tool called NPX that comes from like the Node web ecosystem that is pretty useful for invoking. It's sort of like UVX. Like, so you can...
Yeah, yeah. I was NPX wondering who came with the X's first.
Yeah.
Because I've seen PipX and UVX, and then I was like, oh, okay, NPX... Is that from NPM?
It's from the Node ecosystem. And what it allows you to do is run a script that was packaged up and like put on the NPM code base or NPM registry. And a convenience about that utility is that, and specifically the skill package or skill like installer, is that it will do things that you can, it has like a little bit of management around your skills. So you can upgrade skills, you can delete them, you can say, oh, I have, these are my different agents that I like to use, like OpenCode, Codex, Claude Code, And depending on which one you have, it'll put that those files in the right place for you and keep them up to date.
Kind of give an idea of like, how current and fresh they are. Okay.
Yeah. Good. If you're a user of Claude Code, we also have Marimo Pairs in the plugin marketplace. So there's like a more direct integration into Claude there.
Okay.
Our team, I think most of us are using NPX, but basically you just need to get these markdown files to a specific folder on your machine.
Okay.
And then that should hopefully be all that you need from your agent to be able to invoke either, say, pair with me on a notebook. That should hopefully trigger it to load the skill, or you directly do / Marimo - pair, and that will load the skill for the agent. And then the skill has a resource within it that teaches the agent how to actually install and use Marimo as well. So if you have Marimo installed, it'll try to, and you say, pair with me on this notebook, the agent will go off and will ask to run a command to start up a Marimo notebook for you. If you have a Marimo notebook running, the skill also teaches the agent how to find running Marimo servers on your machine. So from there, you can connect to an existing session and just kind of get going.
Cool.
Also, we do have in the actual Marimo UI, if you have a session that you're running, if you click on the upper right corner, there's a little drop down and a thing that says pair with an agent, and we give you a little snippet to like put in your terminal and like help kind of get it all set up. So if you want to connect to that exact session, that you basically just need to get the skill. If you don't have it installed, it'll prompt you to get the thing installed. It'll help you out. But these are two separate things. So we have Marimo, which you might have multiple versions of on your machine, and then the skill, which is just that teaches an agent how to, with whatever Marimo you have, like how to get going and connect.
This week, I want to shine a spotlight on another RealPython video course, and it continues the theme of the episode. It's titled Getting Started with Marimo Notebooks. The course is based on a RealPython tutorial by Ian Ayer and is presented by my frequent co-host, Christopher Trudeau. In the video course, you'll learn how Marimo Notebooks automatically update dependent cells, ensuring consistent results across your work. How reactivity allows Marimo to determine the correct running order of cells using a directed acyclic graph, or DAG. How sandboxing in Marimo creates isolated environments for notebooks, preventing package conflicts and ensuring reproducibility. You'll learn how to add interactivity to your notebook with UI elements like sliders and radio buttons. And you'll also learn how traditional linear notebooks have inherent flaws, such as hidden state issues that Marimo addresses with its reactive design. Like most of the video courses on RealPython, the course is broken into easily consumable sections and has code samples for the techniques shown. All our lessons include transcripts, including closed captions. Check out the video course. You can find a link in the show notes, or you can find it using the search tool on realpython.com. So you have a couple demonstration videos on YouTube kind of showing off things that you've done. There's like kind of a shorter one that, you know, again, if people are like, I wonder if this would be useful for me, it's kind of a data exploration. And then your second one goes a little further in depth. You can kind of see the agent inside of Claude Code kind of chugging away, trying out different things that you're then, you know, showcasing in the notebook. So if people want to learn a little more, they can look at those things. We'll have links for that. As far as agents go, you know, Claude is the one that I think gets most mentions as far as like people I talk to and I work with right now, but it should work with other agent setups.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's packaged up as a skill, like any agent driver that is aware of skills, which is most of the ones that I like, OpenCode for sure, Codex for sure. Like you just need to install the skill.
Okay.
Like I mentioned, the installers that we have will like help link them agents specifically, but we're trying not to tackle that problem at Marimo. We like there are better tools probably for helping you install your skills,
right?
And then whatever agent you bring to the table should hopefully know how to use Marimo.
Yeah, you can follow the standards, and hopefully, you know, you don't have to be too much in the explaining how
exactly.
How things go. I mean, it's the advantage of like us finding more standards for packaging and other things, you know, similarly like that.
Yeah,
which is good. I could see a certain subset of data scientists or researchers being very, very interested in this if they watch that YouTube video. The idea of exploratory data analysis is such a common thing that you go through and often can be a lot of work. You know, like one of the first things you do in the demonstration you have is bring in I don't know how many data sets that was as CSVs. Maybe you can tell me, but it was a pretty large data set of, it's like artwork. I'm not that familiar with that repository. Mm-hmm. Familiar with some of the artists. But it was like pulling in, I don't know, maybe a dozen or more, and then doing the code to kind of combine them and join them together and so forth. Maybe talk about that a little bit. Like what are some of the things that you think a data scientist or researcher would find interesting in using a skill like this?
Yeah. Well, so I come from an academic background, and I used to work in notebooks. And I think that often when I had a problem that I was working on, like code was sort of a necessary a means to an end to be able to like answer my data question.
Right.
And I think a place where Marie Maupert can really like one up people that are is that like hopefully code should not be the bottleneck for you being able to answer your question with your data. And so like as you're working, like in that example that you mentioned before, there's a bunch of joins, there's some tables. I know that there's some stuff in those data sets, and my means of being able to, you know, add that kind of stuff to my notebook so that I can explore it in this environment that's really useful, which is my notebook. I might have to do this like big crazy join and like look at the columns and make sure that I'm not missing a column or like, so I do that demo because I used to do that demo inside Marimo, and I did those joins by hand manually previously.
Okay.
And it took me a very long time.
How did it do?
Well, it did. I mean, it did great. Like when I originally did that notebook, there was a property of the data that I was really interested in, which was how many of these artworks are public access.
Right.
And when I first did that join and had my data frame, I could not find a column that had that information. Mm. So I actually scraped the website and like wrote this whole other script to be able to like find the public domain art so that I could enrich the data set with that extra information. That column was in the data set and I just missed it, like when I did it the first time.
Ah, so it was able to comb it a little better than you.
So exactly. So, and I think it's, you know, when there, it was more that, you know, I had a little bit of free time. I was curious about this data set.
Yeah.
I knew that there were these 12 tables, but yeah, I don't know. I missed.
Well, I mean, the data sets can have so many crazy columns and often, you know, like unless you're, you know, friends with a researcher, you can ask them, well, what does that mean? Like sometimes the naming of the column is just, you know, obscure.
Yeah.
So that's interesting that you can kind of use it, you know, again, these are the great things about LLMs generally, summarization and you know, sort of like going in and it doesn't get tired, whereas you might get tired looking at 50 columns or whatever it is.
Yeah, and to be fair, like the thing I'm interested in is like this property of that data that's probably somewhere in that data set. And like, yes, these models are going to be more efficient at getting me to the next step that I'm curious about, which is, okay, now I want to compare this property across like all the artwork, right? And like answer my data question with these data. So yeah, I found that column, which was like, I thought was a pretty cool thing. I didn't know that it existed in that data set. And I'd given that demo many times before. And
that's cool.
And then, so I think kind of like offloading that type of work that normally I would like really have to be hands-on for to just get to the next step that I was curious about, which is, okay, where do I go next with these data? What can I look at it? Like,
take some of the drudgery away, you know?
Yeah. But at the same time, like that code that gets produced is like a cell that's in the notebook. So it's not like, it's not like I wrote this script that downloaded and did that join and wrote a file to disk. And now if I ever needed to change something about that code, I like have to edit that file, then run that script and grab that input to load into my notebook. It's because it's now inside the Marimo environment, we have an understanding of like when that code needs to rerun. So if I changed an ordering of a column or like, oh, I don't really like how the agent like named that column, like I can make that change and rerun the cell.
Right.
And now I have a notebook that, you know, when I turn off my agent, it still has that cell that will run and has that, I've checked in that piece of code. So it sort of can break up your data tasks as we do in notebooks into these separate computational units, which are your cells. And then because it's Marimo, like, if anything changes, we know how to automatically update the rest of the cells that are in the notebook. So
yeah,
I think you can, you know, put your agent off on working on like a one-off task, like getting the data all wrangled in a format that you want to like explore. But then now that it's in memory, other things that you might want to explore in that data, like, okay, I want to plot this.
Right.
That's a very quick type of thing that you make a cell. Oh, that's not that interesting. Throw it out. Like, oh, maybe make a couple cells. I'm interested in this. And because the model has so much context, also those prompts don't have to be so long. Like that's been an interesting thing that I've realized. Like if I know something exactly that I want to do, like taking the time to write a really good prompt to explain like this, you should do this, then this, I think is really valuable. But if I don't, so oftentimes like when you first have this data set, maybe you're not like the domain expert. You want just some like high level summaries. And like, maybe you, like for me, I often want to look at a bunch of different distributions in the data set.
Sure.
And I could try to offload some of the work to the model by just saying like, can you just look and see like, are there like, what are the distributions like look like in these columns? And then Scratchpad, you can kind of make it and then prioritize like a few charts that you think might be interesting for me to look at in review. And so I think, yeah, that ability, it's not so much as just the ability to like write code and execute cells that's important, but just more like there's just so much rich context when you're living inside of this like data environment where, you know, I have all these values in memory that if the model has a perfect understanding of like, if I'm hovering a point, I can ask about that point and the model now can like go off and do anything that I've given my model permission to do on my system. So I think one thing I show in the demo is like I hover a point and I say like, oh, can you just open up this webpage for me so I can like read more about this artwork?
Right.
Like that type of, I've had experiences like this when I used to work in like genomics research where I found some interesting part of the genome that I might want to, you know, revisit later. And I was literally like writing down on a sheet of paper, like what part of the genome I like zoomed into and was like looking at, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And now that type of state is not something I have to manually get out of the notebook. I can ask the model to, you know, write that to disk. I could send an email that that becomes data.
Right. If the skills have those abilities, right. Yeah.
Right. That becomes data now that I can give as to my model as context for it to do whatever I need to do with it. I think it's really powerful when you're exploring data, especially, but also, you know, if you want to let the model like work on a task for a long time, there's very few times where I need to like totally step in to like, I can watch it work live alongside me. I can stop it. I say, oh, no, it's not quite where we're going. And you really feel, that's why we gave it this name, Marimo Pairs, because you really, it's like pair programming. I can sit back and sort of guide the test that I want in the notebook and then maybe make some little tweaks. And
this is the most Star Trek computer thing I've ever thought about, because like, it's like, okay, this outlier here, what is that? Give me more information about that, or open up a web search about it or whatever. That idea is very much like, again, science fiction-y, kind of like almost a trope in some ways of like being able to like zoom and enhance and, you know, do that sort of stuff. But to be able to, and, you know, throughout your demo, you're using a speech to text type of tool, so you can kind of make it conversational,
yeah,
in a way, which I see a lot of people do that. I think that's a pretty common trend for people that are using agents. But yeah, I think that part of it, exploratory data analysis and cleaning data and, you know, just like trying to figure out what the story is in the data can be sometimes drudgery for people, depending on, and especially if the project gets big. Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah. I mean, the demo that I often show is like an exploratory task because it demos quite well. There's a lot of visuals and like you can,
right,
like looking, yeah,
the across, artwork thing is perfect.
Yeah,
for that.
Yeah, exactly. You can see the artwork. I think everyone can kind of connect to that example.
Right. People know who Picasso is and, you yeah, know, things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And one neat thing is also in that interface is the ability to, I make a selection in the plot and I can just say, can you tell me about like what's in this selection? And
right,
that selection in memory is just represented as a set of indices into the data frame. But because the model knows that I have this data frame and I have this selection, it has Python now to connect those two things. And like, you can see the Scratchpad work that it's doing, and it's going to look at like group by artwork type sort and like see what the distributions are. And quickly it can kind of give me some understanding of like what I've made a selection. But it can also do the opposite, which is like, you know, maybe I've made this visualization and I know about an artist. I want to see that artist in the visualization. And I can just say, oh, can you just show me like Picasso in this view? And the model can do the opposite for me. So it can sort of both help me define selections and like understand selections, which I think is, there are many times when you might be in a notebook and there's like that might be worth checking, but like, I don't really want to type out that query to like look at it or like,
right, right.
And now I think that there will be a little bit of learning of just being able, like that feels a lot more freeing to just be able to be like, what about Picasso? Like, what about Rothko? Or like these other artists, like
try these things out.
Like it, that, and I think I got that feeling when I started working on software projects where like, suddenly tasks that seemed like they, like these what if ideas for like working on like traditional software felt a lot cheaper to like experiment with, because I could just create a nicely scoped prompt and then say like work on that for a bit and like let's explore it. And now like, I hope we can start to bring that type of muscle to like data problems where something that like, oh, I should check that out, but like, what's that plotting library like? I came from like a visualization background, and there are so many errors that are overlooked because I think there are many parts of the process where people just aren't, unfortunately, like visualization tools are just hard to bring into some part of the process to like, just look at your data.
They're all designed differently too, which makes me crazy. Like there's like, you know, well, where's the, with the grammar of graphics is a total like way of thinking that you got to like mold your brain to it. And then there's the other ways where like, it's all like about classes and importing things on top of other things to like kind of expand that out. And it, you know, like Bokeh is so different from like, you know, other ones like Altair or, you know, or things like that. It's very interesting that way.
Yeah. And you feel like you kind of had to jump out of your, I don't know, the type of work that you normally do in a notebook or like the APIs that you're really familiar with because they're related to data wrangling to now like do this like sanity check to just like look at your data. And my hope is that those types of things that we all should be doing, but kind of felt expensive to do, like are cheap and like it actually improves our ability to audit what we're doing as we're working in notebooks, because now I can focus on the important bits rather than like remembering an API that, you know, I couldn't remember in the first place. So
there's a concept about notebooks that I've always liked, the idea of experimentation, of trying things out. Again, you could kind of get into this weird sort of state issues with Jupyter or potentially other notebook systems. And that's, you know, something I like about Marimo in that sense, where, you know, you're experimenting, you're trying things out, you're, you know, doing things. And for most coders, that might be a REPL type of experience where you're, you know, type Python and just try out the code inside there. It may take quite a bit more typing than you're used to doing, but that sort of read, evaluate, print loop. And you're sort of explaining that that's kind of what's happening a little bit under the scenes here. Maybe dig into that. Like, why are you explaining it like a REPL, and, you know, how is it similar to that?
Yeah, so basically the Marimo Pair skill has one tool, which is a bash script that's called execute code. And the input of it is like a little bit of a Python snippet. And that Python snippet runs in the Marimo kernel. And then the response that it gets back is like the standard error, standard out of like whatever happened in that kernel execution. So it feels very similarly to just, you know, Python-C on your command line and just running a snippet of code. But that snippet of code is like inside of the active kernel and not like, so it has access to globals or variables that like exist inside the notebook. And it's living at whatever state you are currently in your environment. So it has similarities to a REPL, but there's also like important distinctions because that execution context is like quite special inside of Marimo.
Okay.
And so one of the things is that, right, it has access to these variables, but also it has like a bit of rules that you have to play by inside of Marimo, which are like, you can't, because we model your notebook as a graph, like if you want to add a cell, like you can't redeclare variables, right?
Right.
So one thing that we run inside that execution context is if the model tries to add a cell that, you know, redeclares a variable, it just gets a really quick feedback that says like, hey, you can't do that. And so the model can then run again, like self-correct and like fix that change such that the thing that it's building is actually like a good Marimo program that has this reproducible deterministic execution order.
Right.
And so I experienced something very similar to this is like, now I've gotten better at like writing tests from, which I've always should have been doing like from the start. But now when I'm working with agents more for software engineering, like I really focus on like, how are we going to test this? Because then we can make sure that like whatever we're working on, it, like once we can, you know, satisfy this test, like now I'm going to have more confidence that like what it's doing is correct. And I don't have to explain necessarily like all the constraints if I have just a really good test that captures like what is should be getting done. And so an analogy to bring this back to Marimo Pair is like when we had a previous skill that, or we still have a set of skills for if you don't want to use Marimo Pair and just like edit Marimo notebook files on your file system, where a big part of that skill is just trying to teach the model, like, what are Marimo's rules such that it creates like a valid program as it's working.
Okay.
But you can kind of think of that as like, now the model's context has to be wasted in like understanding Marimo's rules and understanding like the relationships between all of your cells, because the context is now responsible and the LLM is responsible for like making sure that your variables aren't redeclared. Versus with Marimo Pair, the model just is writing a, like just trying to focus on the current thing in front of it. And then it's just going to get a feedback loop that says like, hey, you can't define a variable that way. Like you have to redefine, you have to change the variable name.
Yeah.
And you never have to teach it all the rules of Marimo or have it deeply understand Marimo the same way a user doesn't have to deeply understand like how reactivity works inside Marimo to be like productive. It'll just get the friendly warning that says like, hey, you just got to change that. And then kind of can keep going. And
these traffic signals will pop up as they
going. And so like, maybe it just sort of slowly learns without polluting all of its context, like what you're trying to do. And maybe it just naturally does it without having running into any of those guardrails. And it's never had to like use its context at all to like understand Marimo's rules. So that's kind of by putting it into this special execution environment, we really can like push the model to allow the user to have a really good experience in terms of authoring this notebook document without like previously, like I think you could have a lot of differences, especially, you know, if you're using like a really capable model and maybe like an open source model, like you might have a much rigid, more different user experience. And we haven't quantitatively tested this in any way, but like by putting more, just saying like, okay, yeah, just run this tool and, you know, hit your head and hallucinating APIs and stuff like that, like it'll just kind of self-correct and kind of just keep going on the execution calls instead of really relying on like the training of the model to be able to like understand the nuances of you know, your Marimo program.
One of the things I was trying to figure out there is that, and one of the big issues right now is just like context generally, like how much do we have, like, you know, kind of this relationship with like usage in that. Is it something that you see it potentially get to the point where the context gets, I don't know, what I've heard is as it starts to fill it up, is eventually it just starts to misperform. And that's why you're kind of doing some of this preemptive pruning that you've been talking about. Like, okay, don't worry about all these things. We'll discuss it as they come up. Mm-hmm. And then that will be, you know, presented in the context. Are there other things you have had to think about? Is that like part of the design as you've been working on the product? Like how do I, you know, manage the context of this thing? Is that a big factor of it?
Definitely. I think you can kind of think of Marimo Pair as extending context with Python. Like, and I'll dig into what I mean by that. So like previously, context is like text that the model, like in the example I gave earlier about like our early integrations and our existing integrations with like this like autocomplete that we have in our chat panel inside Marimo.
Right.
When you say at data frame, we like snapshot a schema of the entire data frame and put that into the prompt that then we send back to the model.
Okay.
But maybe the model only needed to know like one column or like two columns, right? But instead, because we were trying to anticipate what the model might find useful, we're taking a picture of like the whole schema to like give to the model. And maybe there's actually information that the model needed that like was not in that what we anticipated.
Okay.
And so instead, because Marimo Pair just is like living inside this environment, all the variables are just things that the model can grab and like create choose to put into its context. So like, you know, if I say like, oh, can you help me plot this data frame? Like the first thing it might do is just look at the data frames I have in memory or try to find the data frames I have in memory. And then if I say like, oh, I want to look at like height and weight, like maybe it's just going to look at a subset of that kind of stuff. And so I think it just gives it's a lot more freedom because these are variables.
Yeah. Back to that creativity thing.
These are like values rather than like text, right? Like, so the model can choose what to bring into context or leave in state. And then that those things can also change, that you just give a lot more flexibility to the model to choose when to like add more to its context or whatnot. And I think, yeah, really trying to push more onto the model to say, and give it good tools to access the state that it might need in such a way that it can be very efficient at grabbing that context if it needs it, which these models are great at writing Python code, so they can grab kind of whatever they need. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that's kind of happening under the scenes, again, go technical again, is if suddenly you say, hey, I would like to get into graphing inside this notebook for this particular data set, and you could suggest, you know, use this particular library or whatever, it's having to kind of go and find that and research it. And it seems like it's using some other kind of tools for importing kind of underneath the covers. Maybe this is too technical, but I found it intriguing when I was looking through the skill.
Yeah, we can dig into this a little bit. So inside of Marimo, like I mentioned, we have this skill that teaches it how to run some Python code in the kernel. But then in order to do like useful things that a user would do, we also need to give it some like ability to perform tasks that you do in the UI. So one thing you can do in the UI is like install packages, you can create cells, you can edit cells.
Right.
And so we've created this we're calling code mode, which is a user interface that's, or sorry, not a user interface, a
agent
coding interface. Yeah, it's an agent interface. Yeah. It's a submodule, a hidden semi-private like submodule within Marimo that we basically expose an API for the agent to use while inside the kernel to perform tasks.
Okay.
And one benefit of that is that it can go through all the Marimo machinery and really provide this like rich user experience that the user would have inside the interface rather than, you know, stepping outside of Marimo to like go install packages or something like that, for example. So for the thing that you brought up about plotting, let's say, let's just taking a step back, like let's walk through maybe what would happen if I was like, oh, I want to make a plot, a scatter plot of height versus weight for this data set that I have.
Yeah.
So maybe the first thing that the model does is maybe ask me what library I want to use, but maybe because it's living in my Python environment, it just looks in my sys modules and sees what packages I have installed already, right? So it has access to doing that type of thing, or I could, you know, coach it to try to, you know, use the libraries I care about.
Yeah.
But maybe I say, like, I want to plot this with Altair, which is a plotting library. So it tries to import Altair inside the kernel and it says, oh, Altair is not installed. So it's going to get back a message that says, like, Altair is not installed. And then on that code mode interface, we just have an API that's called install packages. And the model can call that within the execution context.
Okay.
And then whatever package manager is set up inside Marimo, whether that be Conda or Pixie or UV, that will all flow back through Marimo's machinery to make sure that that gets installed. And then we can also rerun the cell that it tried to run again. So like by having this all within this environment, like as a user, you just configure these things as you would want to use them inside Marimo. And then instead of having this task that happens outside with like pip or UV or like, instead, you don't have to teach your model what you want to use or like your desired way of fulfilling that import error. Instead, it will just use however you've already intentionally set up Marimo to do that.
And yeah, you could, on the reverse of that, you could have set up your initial cell, you know, like very Python-centric way of doing it and imported in advance. Like, I know that these are the tools that I want to use in this project, but it could do it on the fly also. I mean, you could work either direction.
Exactly. Yeah. And I would say even like if you had them all in your first cell, that would probably be a very strong indicator to the agent when it like connects to your notebook of like, ooh, these are the libraries the user wants to use. So like trying to, but I think by living inside that environment, like the agent is less likely to try to bring in a package that you like might not have. It can actually look at the current state of the environment that you're working in, not just your file system, and like try to, maybe it'll prompt you to like, you know, can I install a package? You say, yes, install a package for me.
Yeah. So what's great is, as we've mentioned already, you can already play with this if you're interested. There's a variety of ways we already discussed as far as installing it. You guys have a whole bunch of other things you've been working on. I don't know if you want to like just give us a couple other like maybe a quick hits on what's happening at Marimo.
Yeah, I mean, so over the last year, like we've been growing our team. We're doubling down on our open source. So right now, we're just really, really focused on our community and building out both the Marimo open source and other ways that folks can start to collaborate and work on Marimo notebook documents. So like I mentioned before, we have a VS Code extension.
Yeah.
We have Marimo Pair. We have Marimo extension for Jupyter Hub, so folks can deploy Marimo inside Jupyter Hub. We also have MoLab, which is like a cloud-hosted version of Marimo notebooks that are free for our community. There's a lot that we're putting into scaling up MoLab at the moment. So yeah, just a lot of directions, but mostly related to serving our community and really building out the open source. Yeah.
So one of my favorite things inside of Marimo is widgets and the ability to kind of play with them. What's the state of widgets and what's some new ones that are fun?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I always encourage folks to go look at the Wiggly Stuff library from Vincent on our team, which is a set of a bunch of different any widgets. There's a new one that I particularly like that's called a parallel coordinates widget, which is a...
That looked really cool.
It's really cool. It's a technique that comes from the visualization community, but it's, I think there hasn't been a nice implementation for notebooks for a while. And so having one that just, you can sort of drop in and start to look at some really high dimensional data without having to necessarily project down into like some distorted, like nonlinear projection, that it's really cool for this type of like exploratory analysis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We have a bunch of stuff coming up with slides. Like Shamir and our team right now is working on an improvement of like helping folks turn their Marimo notebooks into slides. So
combining into like a presentation kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So you could take each of your cells and turn them into a slide deck. So you could, you know, use your notebook to make a slide and presentation.
Yeah. Nice. Well, I have some questions I usually ask everybody when they come on the show.
Okay.
And the first is, what's something that you're excited about that's happening in the world of Python?
Wow. I'm excited with where all the, for everyone that I feel like likely feels this in the community, but where all the tooling is going in the Python ecosystem. Like, I think
it's a good direction we're headed.
It's a really good direction just in terms, like, the standards are all getting better. Like, you know, on the Marimo side, there's a lot that we have been able to just, the standards improved a lot, which meant like we could introduce features inside of Marimo. Like, we have a sandbox mode, which will like write your packages as this like TOML script metadata that a package manager like UV can like bootstrap your notebook environment. So not only do we understand like the relationships between your cells, but now we can like hopefully bootstrap the environment plus the relationships, which has, I think, been a big challenge for notebooks in the past. Yeah, the tooling is just getting really good. I think as we do more agentic types of workflows, having really quick checks to verify that like the code that's about to execute is like correct for all these like static reasons is good. So one thing I've been talking to someone on our team is having potentially like hooks or integrations with tools like Ruff or like TY for Marimo Pair, where we could like type check the code quickly or like do something to try to enforce a little bit more constraints if users want that on like the code that they're authoring into the notebooks. And because those tools are getting so fast, like that wouldn't be such an annoying check to run. So I'm just excited about where that tooling space is going in the Python ecosystem and how we can try to creatively think about bringing that into Marimo itself. Yeah,
cool. So what's something that you want to learn next? This doesn't have to be coding related.
That's a good question. I've recently gotten into framing. Like, I've been trying to learn how to cut mats to make custom photo frames. So
I've been down that path. Okay. It's a cool path.
So yeah, this has been just a little journey for me that I've made a few mats, and I think leveling up to like, now I found a few frames that I've put the mats in and cut some nice, some prints and put them in them. But and it's made a lot of like one-off Christmas gifts and things this last year. But
yeah,
maybe learning a bit more about the framing side of it as well. So
yeah, cool. Yeah, I used to do consulting for music stuff. And occasionally we'd get into like a barter situation where the person was like, you know, can you help me set up my home studio and teach me how to use my equipment? And this lady was a framing, guru. She was amazing at it.
Cool.
And so we traded because I was getting into photography and darkroom stuff. So this is a while ago, but I took some of my favorite photos and she just did this astounding job of like double matting them and doing all this other kind of cool stuff. And man, it makes a difference. Makes your stuff really pop on the wall. So how can people follow along with the work you do online?
Yeah. So I'm Manzt, M-A-N-Z-T on GitHub and also Blue Sky. I'm on X as Trev Manz. Yeah, most of the work is probably you can follow on GitHub. I have a blog, but I don't post in that much. So
yeah. People can follow does Marimo have like a standard blog that people would follow along to?
Yes. Yeah, definitely follow the Marimo blog. I'd also, in order to keep up with all the things that were on Marimo, like I'd encourage folks to join our Discord.
Okay.
Also, we have a really great YouTube that Vincent runs, and we hear many folks from our community that, you know, or folks come in often because they find a video there or other socials. So yeah, if you want to stay on top of new little features, we're shipping all the time. Like, I think it's a great place to just kind of keep up.
Yeah. Well, Trevor, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's been great to talk to you.
Yeah, it's been great being here. Thanks for having me.
I want to thank Trevor Manz for coming on the show this week. And I want to thank you for listening. If you like the episode, a great way to help us grow our audience is to share it with other Python users who you think might enjoy it. You can also leave a rating or a review on your podcast platform of choice. If you or your company are interested in sponsoring the podcast, you can find all the information at realpython.com/advertise. You can find show notes with links to the topics we spoke about inside your podcast player, or at realpython.com/podcast. And while you're there, you can leave us a question or a topic idea. I've been your host, Christopher Bailey, and I look forward to talking to you soon.